You know, we have created an economic system in which it is cheaper to torture animals in factory farms than to treat them humanely on pasture, in which it's cheaper to saturate food with chemicals and hormones and antibiotics and pesticides, to strip it of its fiber and minerals and load it up with sugar, than it is to eat Mother Nature's bounty straight from the earth. Because people don't want food that's full of chemicals and junk anymore. We realize we're sick of seeing our kids suffering from diabetes and obesity. We're sick of seeing our elders dying of dementia. We're sick of seeing all of us afraid of cancer and heart disease. And we know how to do better. We know how to turn all this around.
Welcome to Business Game Changers. I'm Sarah Westall. I have a real treat for us. I have Ocean Robbins coming to talk about the food revolution that he is leading. They have a summit that's coming up on April 28th through May 7th, and it is the largest of its kind in the world. They expect to have over 300,000 people participating in this thing, and they are bringing the top scientists that they could find in the world, top 24 scientists, on the latest research on how food works with all the different diseases and, you know, cancer and Alzheimer's and your gut and brain health and all these things. And they're going to be talking about different subjects every day in this summit. And so I'm bringing him on, and first we're going to talk about kind of the nature of the problem that we have. He's going to talk about what's going on with food, what are the best foods and the worst foods for us to have. It's not quite what we think. We get all these mixed signals. You know, people say coconut oil is good for you, and others people say it's bad for you. And I mean, we just get mixed signals everywhere. You know, too much sugar in fruit is bad for you. You know, natural fruit sugar is bad for you. Or no, it's not bad for you. It's great for you. So it's really hard to understand. And they bring the science to the table and tell you what's really going on. And this show, we're going to talk about what some of those top foods are and what some of the worst foods are. And then he talks about the summit a little bit. But it's a two-part show. He sticks around and he talks about, for the next part, the food industry itself. What's actually going on, how they're raising these animals, what the ethics are behind it, what they're using and what's in these animals' bodies. It's really interesting. And then he dives more into the food summit on what the actual topics are and what you're going to learn. Absolutely incredible. I really recommend it. They're going to do a different topic each day. And then if you pre-register, the whole thing's for free. But if you want to buy all the CDs and you want to buy there's like 2,000 separate little articles and information how to actually implement this stuff, it's only $67 to get the whole set. And then if you buy it during the summit or after it, or during the summit, it's $97 or $99. And then after the summit, the rest of the year, it's $199. So if you do it before, it's $67. I highly recommend doing that if you can. And even if you can't afford it, the whole thing is free. So you want to take notes, you want to watch, you can re-watch the thing all day long for 24 hours until the next subject. So if it's something that is really affecting you, you can sit and take notes and re-watch it. Excellent opportunity to learn a ton. And I have the link below for those that want to register for the summit. And he also sticks around for my patrons and tells us what the three top superfoods are. What three foods will help you the most that science has found? And you'll be surprised at how awesome these foods are. So that's for my patrons. And you can join and be a patron for as little as $1 a month. I need more than that. But if you whatever your budget is, I appreciate whatever. And if you can't afford anything, let me know and I'll get you the content for free. I don't want to keep this from people, but I really need to support my show and keep going. And again, to get around censorship and to get around, I don't think this one will be censored, but my other shows really are. If you could share my stuff as wide and far as possible, this information is so important for people. If you could share that as well, at least the summit, and get as many of your friends involved with this summit, I think is just going to be great information. So let's get into that interview now with Ocean Robbins. Hi, Ocean. Welcome to the program.
Oh, I'm thrilled to be with you. Thanks so much.
Well, you have an one thing that you're doing, and it's amazing, is that you're working on solutions. So much as we're pointing out the problems, and you're there, okay, I got to get these solutions out to people. But of course, we need to identify what the problems are to be able to figure out what solutions that we're going to go. So I want to talk, you're doing this huge food summit. And so I want to talk about what the problems are and then some of the solutions that you're going to be presenting. Let's talk about the fact that our food is essentially killing people. I know it's happening slowly, but it's killing people. Do you think it's happening on purpose? Are they doing it on purpose? Or is it just because they're greedy and dumb?
You know, I believe in never attributing to malice what can adequately be explained by greed. You know, we might have some people that have malicious intent, but for the most part, what we've got is actually the predictable results of the choices and the systems we've established. You know, we have created an economic system in which it is cheaper to torture animals in factory farms than to treat them humanely on pasture, in which it's cheaper to saturate food with chemicals and hormones and antibiotics and pesticides, to strip it of its fiber and minerals and load it up with sugar, than it is to eat Mother Nature's bounty straight from the earth. And so, we have created a toxic food culture and it's killing us. But the good news is that we're not victims. And that's what I think is really empowering. I think that the food industry will respond to consumer demand. And as we say, as consumers, we are sick of being sick. We are fed up with toxic food. We are hungry for a change, that we start to see a rallying point, that the same practices that made Coca-Cola and McDonald's and all of the other big food giants into giant forces in the last century, they're going to be dinosaurs this century if they don't make a radical shift. Because people don't want food that's full of chemicals and junk anymore. We realize we're sick of seeing our kids suffering from diabetes and obesity. We're sick of seeing our elders dying of dementia. We're sick of seeing all of us afraid of cancer and heart disease. And we know how to do better. We know how to turn all this around.
Well, do you think it's everybody, or do you think, I really see a shift. If you ride the subway, I know it sounds bad and stereotypical, but there's a sea of people that are completely unaware and they don't care. They're just going to eat the cheapest food. They actually don't have much money. So they're eating the cheapest food that tastes the best and they don't care.
Well, the tragic thing is that in a toxic food culture, the path of least resistance is a fast track to suffering, disease, and death. You know, as long as it's cheaper and more tasty and more convenient to go with Doritos and Big Macs than to go with broccoli and kale and, whole foods, then we're going to see a lot of people going there. You know, remember, half our population is in debt. Most people are struggling paycheck to paycheck just to survive. So for a lot of people, it can seem like healthy food is some kind of an elitist luxury for the privileged few.
Honestly.
And we've got to change that, because here's the thing, you and I and all of us, whether we're rich or poor, we're paying the price for a toxic food system, because our 19% of our gross domestic product in the United States goes to disease symptom management. You know, we call it healthcare, but we know perfectly well it's not caring for our health. It's treating the symptoms of our disease. Most of us are sick. 2/3 of our population is overweight or obese. A toxic food system creates a toxic and sick society, which is bad for all of us. It's bad for our finances as well. So it would actually be a lot cheaper to, for example, double the value of food stamps for vegetables and fruits, to, for example, make other shifts that would subsidize making healthy food more accessible to low-income communities, to shift our food system in a healthy direction. That would actually save all of us money in the long run, in our insurance premiums, in our government taxes, And it would create a more robust economy, because we'd have less people who are struggling and who are drags on their families and their communities because they're feeling like crap. So I think that the food revolution is actually a really winning proposition. You know, the way I look at it, food 1.0 is about survival. If you get enough calories to fill your belly, then that's success. Food 2.0 is about commerce. It's about taste and texture and cuisine. And we've got food 2.0 in the world today, more and more dominant, which brings us an amazing array of options. The consumer is king, but unfortunately, food 2.0 is morally bankrupt. And so now I'm calling for food 3.0, where we make the central organizing principle of our food system health, health for our bodies and health for our planet. And there are still lots of healthy profits to be made in food 3.0. It's just that we make them from healthy food.
Well, it's the same amount of profits. It's just different. So are people aware enough to make a difference? I know that's why they say it's for the elite. Is it, I mean, are they aware enough? And are they going to embrace it where we would say, okay, it's cheaper to give food stamps that, and are those people even going to want it? Are they just going to buy more crap because they got more food? You know what I'm saying? I don't.
Well, I'm saying that we should, for an example, have our food stamps be double value for fruits and vegetables, right?
Not
for everything.
Because my sister's a doctor.
And I think they should actually not be used. They should actually be banned for soft drinks, for example. You shouldn't be able to buy soft drinks.
Well, if you're getting a handout, then maybe we can say it's only for this. But
exactly.
It's a handout.
A handout that helps them up, you know, and encourages people to move in the right direction. You know, most people are not very informed about food. It's frightening how little people know. But I think that's good news. You know, as an entrepreneur, I say that's an opportunity because that means there's a gap, which means we can do better. We're not victims of our current fate. We actually have the capacity to turn it around, which is thrilling. I think that most people, when you get right down to it, would rather be healthy than sick. Most people want their kids to be well. Most people want their kids to be able to think clearly. Most people are worried about their parents and don't want them to die of Alzheimer's. So when we get right down to it, you know, when we spread the truth, I think a lot of people are hungry to learn it. But you're right. A lot of folks are struggling to survive day to day, which is why we as a society have some degree of responsibility. You know, kids should be learning about nutrition in school. Doctors should be learning about nutrition in medical school.
Well, they're not. That's the biggest. Yeah. I mean, the fact they get one, you know, class on it. My sister's a doctor and she, you know, we talk about this and she knows, you know, getting them to have a healthy foundation and changing their lifestyle. But she says, if I do that, I'll just lose the client. They go to the next doctor. They just want an easy fix, 75% of them. There's a quarter that are reasonable. But 75% of them just want an easy fix, the pill, and go and leave. And if you start talking about, you know, you really got to change how you eat, they feel like you're lecturing them, and they just go to the next doctor.
Exactly. It's true. You know, everyone has their own journey. We can't shove anything down anyone's throat. But I think that what I'm looking for is I'm looking for the people who want to be healthy.
And it is what it is. If you're going to be left behind, then too bad, but don't drag me down with you because
right.
You refuse to eat well. You refuse to take care of yourself. So I'm sorry, but it is what it is. I mean, but we got to give them the tools. We got to give them the tools to be able to say, okay, now you're on your own and I'm sorry.
You can't save anyone from the consequences of their own actions. You know, we're all going to eventually reap what we sow. And so I think that in today's food culture, unfortunately, a lot of us are planting the seeds that are going to lead to a lot of suffering later in life. But by the same token, we can plant new seeds. And I'm passionate about helping everybody who cares to have the access to the knowledge and the food they need to take care of their families well. You know, some people will always do the wrong thing. You can kind of count on it. It's part of human nature, I think. But at the end of the day, we want to give people the wisdom that they need to turn it around. And that's why we've created the Food Revolution Summit, where we interview some of the top food experts on the planet about what's really going on with our food system, and more importantly, what we can do about it. You know, cancer doesn't care how much you or I know about food. But it does care what we eat. So at the end of the day, what matters isn't so much what's in here. It's kind of what's in your belly. It's what you're feeding yourself with that matters the most. And so I'm a lot more interested in what people do than just in information. That's why I think the rubber meets the road with action. And to me, the food revolution is all about action. It's about what we actually do day in and day out to create the future that we want.
Well, let's face it. It's really hard. I mean, when there's a cake sitting there, a piece of cake, it's hard for me not to go, oh, that tastes so good. I mean, you know, I have a sweet tooth, and so it's really hard for me, no matter how much I know, it's hard for me to do what's right sometimes. So here I am, you know, preaching about leaving them behind. I might be leaving myself behind because I can't help it sometimes, although I try hard, right? Okay, let's talk about what are those worst foods that we should avoid so that at least we avoid the worst of the worst and why we should avoid them. And then we can talk about what the best of the best are, is later, and then we try to go after those as much as possible, right? If, the more we can avoid those and the more we can go to the good ones, the better overall we are.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, one of the things that's challenging is that a lot of people struggle with food addiction. And I want you to know that if you ever feel like you're craving foods, loving foods that don't love you back, if you're ever craving things that you know are not in your best interest, then you're not alone. We have 2/3 of our population overweight or obese, and every year more than 100 million Americans go on a diet to try to lose weight. I don't know if there is any, 99% of those diets fail in the long run.
Well, because you have to change your whole habits, right? Your whole lifestyle and your habits. Yeah. It's not a diet.
I don't know. I don't think there's any other domain where so many people are trying so hard, so consistently with such terrible results. And I'll tell you why. We have a food system that is stacked against us. It's like trying to swim upstream when the river is pulling you downstream.
See, that's the problem. I was talking to Marjorie Wildcraft, another great person. I know you guys know each other. And she, yeah. I was talking about how I went to a gas station. I was on a detox, you know, trying to clean myself out. I couldn't find anything there. Nothing at this gas station.
Exactly. Yep.
I mean, that's the problem. I mean, how do you survive when everything around you is crap?
So here's the thing, Sarah. It's hard, but the pain pushes and vision pulls. Some people are motivated by fear of loss. You know, when we are up against it, if you're faced with a serious diagnosis, you get some serious motivation. So a lot of people make big changes when they're diagnosed with heart disease or cancer or some other serious situation. Vision pulls because we also want to thrive. Some of us decide we want to be in peak performance. We want to love our lives. We want more energy. We don't want to have that afternoon crash. We want to feel mentally clear. We want to wake up vibrant and alive and ready to go. We want to love our lives. We want peak performance. We want to have a thriving sex life. We want to be able to love who we are, right? So whatever the motivation is, what I want to say is that it gets easier and easier to do the right thing when you create healthy habits. And habits are like the structure. It doesn't matter what you do when you have a burst of inspiration. It matters what you do when you're tired, when you're burnt out, when you've had a long week, when you're stressed, the end of a long day. Those are the times when most of us fall back to our worst habits. When we, you know, pull out the bag of chips or the bag of cookies or, you know, go out to the fast food joint and just munch away because we feel tired and worn out and we want to do something that feels comforting and nourishing, satisfying, pleasant, or easy.
The easy is
the thing. Like, what do you do? So we've got to make it easier to do the right thing. So as individuals, we do things like we fill our house, we shop on the weekend or when we got a little time, fill our house up with good foods. You make a big pot of soup or a casserole and you freeze individual meal containers of it in the freezer so they're ready to go when you want them. Have little things of soup ready. Have staples. Make leftovers your friend. You know, a lot of us think leftovers are bad. They're like the discards. They're a waste. But actually, we've got to love leftovers because then you can make three meals at once and then you've got extra. Let's make food social. If you work in a place that with other people work, then go ahead and, you know, create a meal swap. You know, I'll make lunch for everybody Monday. You make it for everybody Tuesday. We kind of share like that, you know. Make extra for your neighbors. See if they'll make extra for you. Let's make food social. So one of the keys to healthy food is quantity. Shop once a week instead of once a day. Get extra groceries. Plan ahead. Cook in quantity when you have the time. And then you have extra. You pay it forward. And then you've created a safety net for yourself when you're tired. Find a few foods that you can prepare easily that you really like and that are good for you and make them your kind of starting rotation. You know, most of us only have a few things that we cook on a regular basis. The truth is, you know, we kind of return to our old standbys, the things we have memorized frequently. So make your starting rotation good stuff that's healthy. You know, if you want to splurge a little bit, make some chocolate chip cookies once in a while, totally go for it. But make your basic, you know, your centerpiece of your diet healthy, good foods. And then it gets easier and easier for your body to adjust. You know, when people surround their diet with healthy foods, your taste buds actually grow to like them more and more because they get acclimated. It gets familiar. A lot of people eat tofu or kale or broccoli or, you know, rice, brown rice, and they don't like it the first time or two or even 10. But if you get used to it, it gets more and more comfortable and familiar. And soon enough, you find yourself loving and even craving healthy foods. You know, my kids, when they were 13, they went to summer camp for the first time. They're twins. And they were exposed to a lot of foods that weren't their normal diet. They came back and they told me that they loved camp, but the biggest problem was that they missed vegetables. They didn't serve enough vegetables at camp. And, you know, I was one proud dad at that moment, I've got to tell you. But I'm sharing this to say it's possible. It's actually possible to miss vegetables.
Well, let me ask you, give us the five worst things that you can do for your body from a food perspective. Just stay away from them if at all possible.
Five foods to stay away from. Okay, well, number one on the list is probably going to be added sugars. Now, I'm going to define added sugars as any form of sweetener that's processed. So that's going to even include, yes, maple syrup, because it's boiled down from, you know, mostly a water sap to, you know, it's kind of processed. But, you know, I think that when we add sugar to foods, we create an artificially sweet experience that, number one, causes us to eat more, but also can spike our blood sugar, can end up creating fat in the liver.
And sugars are so addictive. They're more addictive than cocaine. Yeah. So you just have to work really hard to look for the sugars in the food.
Yeah. And, you know, we find that people lose weight on the Atkins diet and they lose weight on the Ornish diet. And they both have in common that there's no sugar. So from a weight loss perspective, the number one biggest thing you can do is to cut out added sugar. You can cut out some, or quite frankly, you can take a month and say, I will eat none. Like, just don't eat any product.
Just don't stop at the gas station.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Well, you have to plan ahead sometimes.
You do.
But, you know, one thing, if you're at a 7-Eleven or a gas station, you can get nuts and seeds with some salt. You know, but make sure they're not flavored with a sugar product even then, you know. But, you know, there aren't a lot of options in those places. Nuts and seeds are probably one of the best. But, you know, sugar is number one. And then we need to eat less animal products in general, especially processed meats. You know, we now have studies showing us that processed meats are carcinogenic. They cause cancer. They're also linked to higher rates of heart disease.
What do you mean by processed meats? And I want you to get back to what it's linked to with disease.
So I'm talking about spam, bologna, also talking about bacon, all of the meats that have nitrates added to them to help preserve them.
How about if you get like a pork, a half a pig or something, and they make bacon for you and it's like a free range pig and things like that? Would the bacon still be okay then?
Well, it depends. If they've added nitrates to it, then that's still what I'm talking about. It may be better in other ways, but yeah. And then processed meat also includes hot dogs, most hamburgers, unless they're just pure beef. So processed meats are, the World Health Organization has said they're carcinogenic. That means they cause cancer. They're also linked to higher rates of diabetes and obesity and Alzheimer's disease. So they're not your friend if you want to be healthy. And meat in general, you know, the average American gets about 30% of their calories from animal products of all kinds. If you look at the healthiest populations in the world, the so-called blue zones that National Geographic identified, where people live the longest and healthiest lives, they all get between 0 and 10% of their calories from animal products. So, you know, whether some meat is optimal for health or not, we could have a healthy debate about that. But I think that the reality is that most of us are getting at least two or three times too much animal products. So less meat, and if you're going to eat meat, then pasture-raised rather than factory-farmed is the step we want to go in. And then also we want to get away from white flour, and flour products in general are not our friend if you're looking for optimal health. You know, flour products get metabolized by the body very quickly. They actually create a very similar reward sensory process in the brain to what sugar does, and they can be very addictive. So you can eat more than you should, more than you want to, because they trigger that reward dopamine reflex in the brain, and the body wants another hit. So you'll feel yourself addictively pulled towards them.
No,
so
we're not talking
breads.
Okay, well, continue the thing, but we're not, when we're talking flour, we're talking carbs, but we're not talking all carbs like potatoes and things. We're actually talking flour products.
I'm talking flour products. I'm talking about things that have been ground up into little particles. If you eat even sprouted whole wheat, totally different impact on the body than or cooked brown rice or quinoa or amaranth or buckwheat. These are actually associated with positive health outcomes. They're high in fiber. They're good nutrients for the body.
Because they're carbs as well.
Complex carbs. But simple carbs that get broken down by the body really quickly have a very different effect.
Okay. And so
I'm not saying you can't have a little bit of sugar, a little bit of meat, a little bit of, you know, little bit of flour now and then. But if you base your diet around these foods, you're going to pay a terrible price for it.
Okay.
And
so
if you're concerned about weight issues, then giving up flour and giving up sugar are two of the very top things you can do. And then also definitely moving away from the processed animal products. And then next on the list.
Before we get to the next on the list, you were talking about what flour does, and I cut you off. So can you tell us what are the negative effects of flour?
Okay. So flour is very fine particles, which means that it gets broken down by the body really quickly, triggering a dopamine response in the brain because you get this big hit of energy really fast. And the body says, ooh, I like that. It's like a drug. And, you know, sugar is being called more addictive than cocaine, and it probably is. But a lot of people don't realize that its twin sister, brother, whatever you want to say, is flour because it has many of the same impacts. Now, again, for somebody who isn't highly susceptible to food addiction, it's not a problem. You can eat your bread. You won't crave it. You won't want more. But for somebody who is high on the susceptibility scale, who tends to be susceptible to food addiction, then you kind of have to draw some bright lines because you can't have just a little bit. And so any product that has been pulverized into a powder, essentially, and then reconfigured, whether it's chips or bread or crackers, can carry the same trait, which is that it will send the body into a surge and then a crash, which leaves you wanting what? Another hit, another surge.
It's just like taking regular drugs. It's that same up high and addiction.
Yeah, it's the same basic principle. Mm-hmm. It is. And the challenge is that, you know, most of us have been so addicted from before we could talk. I mean, we have kids drinking Coke before they can talk and absorbing all these foods from day one. So it's very difficult for the body to even know itself outside of that addictive cycle. But once you break free, you find that you find yourself drawn to foods that you love, and you're no longer pulled by these compulsive addictions, and your whole world changes. I say food freedom is one of the most powerful forces in the universe because you get choice over what you eat. And, you know, a lot of people who are not high on the susceptibility scale can feel judgmental of folks who aren't eating healthy food and blameful and think, oh, it's their own damn fault if they get sick because they're eating crap. It's their own fault if they're overweight because they're eating crap, and not realize what it's like to be on the other side of it when you actually feel like you don't have true authorship over the choices that you're making. You know, you see something and your whole body goes into a response. You know, you have to have it. You're obsessed with it. You think about it all day long. And, you know, we need to have compassion for ourselves and realize that we have been actually wired for this by a society that has normalized foods that are addictive.
Well, I gotta tell you, I went on a detox and I cut all sugar out, and I did that for like 3 weeks. And it's harder at first. And my daughter had some Skittles and she dropped one in the back seat. And I was like, there's a Skittle on the back seat. I couldn't stop thinking about that Skittle. I had to eat that Skittle. That's terrible, but that's how I felt about that sugar.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so you have two more.
Right. So I would say next on the list would be bottled oils. Now, not all bottled oils are the same, of course. The worst ones are going to be the hydrogenated fats, and like margarine, and, you know, we see partially hydrogenated oils in some food products. They're being phased out because hydrogenated oils in particular have been directly linked to cancer and heart disease, and are probably, if you could get right down to it, responsible for millions of deaths in the last few decades.
So could this be like Mazola and those Crisco and now what about like olive oil that's in a bottle?
So, you know, in general, olive oil and, you know, flax oil and camelina oil, which isn't quite as famous, hemp oil.
Safflower?
Safflower is different. The oils I'm naming have some nutritional value to them. Coconut oil is controversial. There are some good things and some bad things in it. But there's also... you know, there are some medium chain triglycerides in it that are beneficial. MCT oil is the extract that just takes that good stuff out of the coconut. So those oils can be beneficial, particularly if they're not heated too much. And if we use them simply for, like dressings or a little bit dribbled on food or a stir frying at a medium to low heat. But all oils are processed foods. They've all been separated from the whole food, so they don't have the minerals and the vitamins. They don't have the fiber that the original food came with. And like sugar, when you process a food, when you separate it from its whole self, you create a product that impacts the body very differently. And some of the oils, like sunflower oil, safflower oil, commercial canola oil, that's especially when it's been genetically engineered, have very damaging effects on the body. They can trigger the free radicals. They're associated with higher risk of cancer. So in general, you want to get away from the bottled oils and move towards whole foods. If you're going to eat fat, fat's wonderful, but get it from whole foods. Eat real coconut, eat avocados, eat nuts and seeds, you know, eat fatty fish if that's in your ethics. But don't go for all the extracts. Now, a little bit, you know, some olive oil may have some value. I think some high omega-3 oils like flax can have some value, but we don't want to overwhelm ourselves with it. There's still some controversy about it. And in general, bottled oils also cause us to eat more because they're an incredibly dense source of calories. And for most folks, most folks aren't trying to eat more. You know, if you're struggling with weight issues and you want to gain weight, then, you know, oils, healthy oils could be part of the package. But most people aren't in that situation. And I'd say bottled oils are a good one to remove. And then the last thing, if you want to move away from unhealthy foods, say no to packaged foods with long lists of ingredients. If they have chemicals
like Twinkies,
you don't know how to pronounce. What's that?
I said like Twinkies. I mean, those are obvious. But go ahead.
Just for point of fact, since you mentioned Twinkies, it contains 14 ingredients that are actually subsidized by the United States government. Through the commodities system, we have a farm bill that subsidizes certain foods. And
why would Twinkies?
It's subsidizing corn and soy and factory farmed animal products and wheat. And it's not subsidizing. Less than 1% of the money goes to fruits, vegetables, nuts, and seeds, which are the foods we should be eating more of. So we're essentially bringing down the price of high fructose corn syrup, factory farm meat, and a lot of other stuff we should eat less of. And one of those things is. Many of those ingredients are found in Twinkies. So part of the reason Twinkies are cheaper than carrots, for example, is because they're full of this processed junk that we as taxpayers are actually paying for.
But see, now that's where you get into why are we subsidizing the crap? That's where you think it's all greed and other people are like, we can't be that greedy. But, you know, I guess we are. Okay, so you essentially said don't eat everything that's surrounding us. So what, right? I mean, it's like, oh my God, that's everything. You know, honestly. So what can we eat and what can we look for that is good for us? And if you can give us some ideas on what we can eat that might be a sweet that is good too. So what are the top foods we can eat? And then what are the gray area that if we're looking for that sweet?
So I'd say basically we want to base our diet around real whole plant foods. So fruits and vegetables, eat away. Berries, oh my God, they're so good for you. Whole grains.
Quinoa, so oatmeal, amaranth. Would oatmeal be good?
Oatmeal is awesome. Yeah, oatmeal's great. Now, not if you dump it full of sugar and milk and butter, you know. Although a little bit, if it helps you enjoy it, fine, enjoy yourself. But oatmeal's great. Spices are wonderful. We want to season our food more with spices and less with sugar, salt, and fat. because that spices are really beneficial. They have all kinds of beautiful nutrients and antioxidants in them that are potent cancer fighters and great for your health.
Like what one's some of the best? What are some of the best spices to use that are really help?
Well, the number one spice on the planet is turmeric. I mean, turmeric is spectacular.
And what does
for brain health? If you're concerned about Alzheimer's, eat your turmeric. In India, turmeric, the average Indian eats about a teaspoon a day of this spice. And I mean, it's a huge part of their cuisine. And Indians have a fraction of the Alzheimer's rates that we do in the United States, like a tenth. And so a lot of people think, now half the population of India is vegetarian, so that could be part of the reason as well. But a lot of people think that the turmeric is a big factor. So turmeric's great. Black pepper is great. All of the peppers, the red peppers, hot peppers, have incredible health value. So those are some of my favorites. But turmeric is number one, for sure. And then legumes are associated with wonderful health benefits. There are so many studies. In fact, when we looked at the blue zones and what the people eat in the blue zones, they're very different parts of the world. They have different diets. They all eat diets that are low in animal products, but they have very different cuisines. But there's one thing they all eat a lot of, and that's legumes. You know, beans, split peas, lentils. Well, these are great for your health. Now, one reason they may be good for our health is that people who eat legumes tend to eat less meat. So it's always difficult to separate things out and know is the benefit because people are eating less meat or because they're eating more beans. We don't know for sure. But I can say this, beans are not expensive. They're not hard to prepare and they're really, really good for you.
Now, do they give you more gas, beans?
Well, they're not called the musical fruit for nothing. I'll tell you, there's a trick with beans. It doesn't totally solve the problem, but it helps a lot. If you soak them in water for 48 hours before you cook them, rinse the water twice a day and just soak your legumes. And, you know, get a big, we have like a half gallon jar or a quart jar, the canning jar, you know. Put a cup of legumes in there, fill it up with water, leave it, drain it and refill it twice a day for a couple of days and then cook them. They'll cook much faster, but they'll also, you get rid of the oligosaccharides, which are the primary offending compound. As they're soaking, you'll see a little foam fill up on the water on top. When you pour it off, you're getting rid of a lot of oligosaccharides, and then you end up with a much less toot-producing product. But some people also find that when they haven't eaten much legumes, when they first start off, anytime you introduce a new food, the bacteria in your gut take some time to adjust. And sometimes they're a little freaked out because it's not what they're used to. And so take some acclimation. So start with a couple tablespoons if you like. Quarter cup, work your way up. Add them as a condiment at first and then gradually build them in. And before long, most people find they can enjoy them without problems.
Okay. So what else is there? I think you mentioned four at this point, right? So what's one more?
Let's see, I said fruits, vegetables, whole grains, legumes.
Spices.
Spices, yeah. There's five great things to base your diet around right there. You know, food is Mother Nature gives us an incredible bounty. And when we feast on it, when we feast on real healthy foods, we actually feel a satisfaction in our body. You know, your body needs certain nutrients to thrive. And the tragic thing in the modern world is that most of us are overwhelmed with calories, but we're actually nutrient starved. We're actually not getting a lot of the critical nutrients we need. Like fiber, for example, the average American gets 2% of the fiber. 2% of the population gets the amount of fiber they should be getting. So 98% of us are fiber deficient. Fiber is one of the things that tells your stomach it's full. When you eat plenty of fiber, your stomach gets filled up and it stops wanting more. When you don't have fiber in there, your body doesn't get the signals as easily, and that's part of why you keep craving. If you have ever eaten a dinner and then later at night you're like, oh, I'm hungry. Have you ever had that feeling? It may be because there wasn't enough fiber in your dinner and your stomach didn't get the message, or because there's other nutrients your body's missing out on. So when you eat lots of whole vegetables and legumes in particular, and grains and fruits, your body's getting critical nutrients. And you will find that you get full, actually feel more satisfied sooner.
Well, let me ask you about a couple foods. How about potatoes, white potatoes?
You know, you can eat anything now and then, and it's not going to kill you. But are potatoes a top food for nutrients? No. Red potatoes actually are a little bit healthier. Sweet potatoes are a big notch forward. Sweet potatoes have a lot more nutrients in them. And if you're going to eat one of those kinds of things, I'd say sweet potatoes are the top choice. Red potatoes are next on the list. White potatoes or russet potatoes are kind of at the bottom of the potato world. But you know what? They can be good, especially if you have them with some healthy stuff, with a nice mushroom gravy, for example. Mushrooms are a great, great superfood for your body. Then that can work out well. But if you're going to load them up with sour cream and butter and a bunch of salt, then you know, at the end of the day, that's not a health food. Mashed potatoes, same thing. You know, they're fine, a little side dish to add some flavor and enjoyment, no problem. But base your diet around it? No, not recommended.
Well, how about white rice?
Kind of the same thing. But with rice in general, you've got a new problem, which is arsenic. All of the rice in the world today is contaminated with some amount of arsenic. There's organic and inorganic arsenic. Some of it actually comes from the soil, but a lot of it comes from pesticides that we've used. And our soil all over the world has been saturated with these pesticides, and it also comes in even from things like manure from cows that brings some of that arsenic in. And rice soaks in water. It's swamp grass, and it absorbs the arsenic at high levels. So it's not that you never want to eat it, but, you know, when Consumers Reports did a analysis, they found arsenic in organic rice and inorganic rice and all different types. And interestingly, there's actually less in white rice than brown rice because it concentrates in the hull. So you may actually want to mix it up a little bit. Some people eat brown rice for their health, and there's a lot of good things about it. But some people actually find that a little white rice cuts down their arsenic exposure. But in general, I would say that rice is not the grain you should feature. You should feature whole quinoa, buckwheat, amaranth, millet. Those are going to be better for you long term.
Okay, well, let's talk about sweeteners. How about honey, unprocessed raw honey?
Well, if you're going to eat honey, then yeah, raw, organic, local honey is the way to go. Unfortunately, a lot of the commercial honey that we see sold today is cut with high fructose corn syrup. There was a recent scandal because the U.S., we found that honey from China was often contaminated, in fact, frequently, and so the U.S. actually banned it. But there's still no official testing to find out. So it's often cut with high fructose corn syrup, or the bees are literally fed corn syrup instead of pollen. And, you know, that's tragic. That's not how bees are supposed to be treated. So you want to get local, and raw is great because there's a lot of nutrients in the raw honey that are lost when it's heated and cooked. As a sweetener, that's one of the best. Maple syrup has some beneficial nutrients. Dates are probably even better, or date sugar, because there's a lot of good nutrients in there. And stevia, if you can handle that. Some people don't like the taste of it. But purely as a sweetener, stevia can have some benefits, and it doesn't have some of the negatives. And in general, fruit. Eat lots and lots and lots of fruit and berries. Bananas, particularly, are a great sweetener. You know, my kids love little frozen desserts, so we blend up. Every night we've been doing this lately. We blend a couple bananas with some frozen peaches, some frozen mango, maybe a few berries, a little bit of soy milk for some creaminess. Blend that all up, and we get this amazing sorbet that's totally delicious, and I don't feel guilty about feeding it to them.
Well, and if you skip out on sugars for a while, eventually that will taste really sweet to you, right? I mean, you won't need that other hardcore sweetener.
Yeah, exactly right. You'll find that it gets easier and easier to enjoy. Things taste sweet that didn't used to. I mean, my wife grew up on log cabin, you know, fake maple syrup with high fructose corn syrup. The first time she tasted maple syrup, she said, "This stuff tastes bitter." It didn't even taste sweet to her because that's what she was used to. But after a few years of being together and she started eating like I did, you know, she would taste maple syrup and she thought someone had added sugar to it because it was so sweet. You know, so your taste buds really do evolve. And that's the wonderful thing about it. And so you want to get to a place where fruit tastes sweet to you.
And almond milk and soy milk as alternatives for regular milk, that's good?
Yes, absolutely. And there's a difference here between more unprocessed and less unprocessed options. So with soy milk, there are some soy milks that are contaminated with sugar and that are made in factories. And there are some that are, more whole and unprocessed and unsweetened. I think unsweetened is a big one here because we actually drink an incredible amount of our calories in the modern world. And it's really damaging. A lot of, our sugars come. Actually, we drink a third of the sugar in our diets, which is a stunning percentage. Most of us don't even realize it. And so you want to go for unsweetened if you can. And with almond milk, one of the problems is that most of the commercial almond milks have very little almond in them because almonds are kind of expensive. So they use enough to make it look creamy, but they actually thicken it with sometimes carrageenan, which is actually unhealthy for you. It's a seaweed product, but it's not a healthy product. And in fact, they're thinking of banning it in this country. Many health authorities are. Or they're sweetened with other emulsifiers and not with almonds. So if you can get an almond milk that's actually thickened with almonds and that has some real almonds in it, that's lovely. Almonds are good for you. But a lot of the almond milks are actually sugar water with some thickeners and emulsifiers and a little bit of almond. And I don't think that's a health food for anybody.
That's terrible. Okay. Do you want to do your little break here and then we can finish off this segment and then get to the next segment? Because I know that
sure,
you're tight.
I can go for another 5 minutes if we want to do our break.
Okay, at the right time. Okay, let me just mark this because I'll cut this little segment here. Well, then
sure.
let's get into the food summit, and then we'll do the Patreon 5-10 minute thing after you come on back.
Sounds great.
Okay, so it's almost overwhelming all the stuff that you're talking about here. I mean, I know for me, because like when you go into the gas station, that's all you can find, or you go into a regular food store, you have to really understand and start educating yourself. You're doing a food summit that really gets to that, and you have a lot of experts. You're talking about food that really helps, with Alzheimer's and with cancer and all these things. Can you talk about your food summit a little bit here?
Absolutely. So we're convening 24 of the world's top food experts, leading doctors and researchers who are at the forefront of understanding what's really going on with our food and what we can do about it. Our mission is healthy, ethical, and sustainable food for everybody. And so the Food Revolution Summit is April 28 to May 6, and then it'll be available after that. So whenever you're hearing this, you can go to foodrevolutionsummit.org and sign up to join in for free. My dad and colleague, John Robbins, is a best-selling author. He's written books that have sold millions of copies. And he's interviewing all of the experts in the summit. I'm hosting the whole thing. And together, we are committed to sharing what's really going on and helping empower everybody with the knowledge to choose health. Healthy, ethical, and sustainable food is our goal. And we're focusing this year particularly on food and brain health. That's kind of a sub-theme. Because there are new studies telling us that Alzheimer's is not a one-way street. We have thought historically that it was only a question of how fast the symptoms would progress and that people have essentially no power over it. We see that a third of our seniors are dying with Alzheimer's right now, and the rates are expected to double in the next generation. And the good news is it's reversible. The bad news is that the foundations of Alzheimer's are often laid 30 years before onset of symptoms. The good news is you can turn it around and reverse that path right now. It doesn't have to be your fate. 90% of cases of Alzheimer's and dementia can be prevented by making the right choices earlier in life. So we want to share that knowledge. We want to share also cancer. We have a whole day focused on food and cancer and how you can eat to feed your cells the what they need to be able to fight off cancer. You know, all of us have cancerous cells in our bodies, especially by the time we clear the age of 50. It's pretty much everyone. But they don't all proliferate. A healthy body knows how to cut off the supply to cancer cells so they don't get fed and don't proliferate. And so we want to help your body have the immune system it needs to tell the difference so that when those stray cells kick in, they get cut out. We're also looking at food and heart disease and cardiovascular health. We're also looking at the ethics of food. Where does your food come from? Why does it matter? If you're somebody who wants animals to not be tortured in factory farms, if you're somebody who wants the people who grow our food to be able to make enough money to feed their own families, if you're somebody who wants your food choices to contribute to a stable climate for future generations, then the Food Revolution Summit is also for you, because we're looking at how you can bring your food choices into integrity with your values, with what you want for the world, with what you want for your family and your kids and future generations. It's all connected. And fortunately, the very same food choices that will help you to thrive, that will help you be at peak performance, that will help to fight off disease, help you lose weight, help you love your life, are also the same food choices that are good for your planet.
Well, excellent. Thank you so much. And we're going to do part two where we're going to dive into the food industry. So you'll be back. Thank you.